If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our seminar topic is, Soul's Gotta Do What a Soul's Gotta Do. So, let's take a deep breath and allow yourself to glide with the delicious chills and sensations of warmth and vitality all the way down from the top of your head to the very tips of your toes. Breathe vitality and conscious presence into every quirk of your being. Take another deep breath. And ask for a deeper revelation of your true nature and what it means to be true to yourself. That you can live an authentic life without compromising the directives of your higher nature. You know, we have a natural way of being that produces health and harmony and well-being on every level. Some call this being true to yourself. So that's what we're going to be examining this evening with a special focus on relationships. For example, did you ever wonder why your personal nature got to be the way it is? You know, with all of your likes and dislikes, attractions, aversions, phobias, attitudes. You know, the bent of the sapling determines the shape of the tree. So how was your nature inclined as you entered this incarnation? The quest to discover your authentic self, your true self, and at the base, most fundamental level, to be comfortable in your own skin, I think is often the very first step that one takes toward enlightenment. And of course, the search is usually confined in the very beginning to how you look physically, how you can make yourself more attractive to others. And along with this search to become more attractive comes the desire for significance, how to shine, how to not only be physically attractive, but to have success in how you operate in the world. You know, to be on top of your game, to have all the clout and accoutrements of success, to call the shots, to be in charge, to have power and influence over your affairs. And life for most people remains at that level if it ever gets to that level. And for many, goes no deeper for many, many lifetimes. Because you have to bear in mind that not all the apples on the tree of life, in this case, in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, polarity, diversity, and the movement between the pairs of opposites, which we call life down here, that many, many souls are like little green apples that simply require more time in the sun and rain in order to ripen and be ready to be picked. In other words, many souls need more time and experience in the crucible of life. Crucible comes from the word crucifixion. And truly, the lower self, the ego nature, the full self, is crucified on the cross of time and manifestation. That's the real meaning behind the cross, which is such an ancient symbol. It totally goes beyond any use by any religion, including Christianity. It is truly a universal symbol that comes from the galactic core of life itself. So life has all of eternity in which to unfold soul's destiny. So the only one who is really in a hurry is the human personality. But scream all you want at that little green apple, it still will only ripen at its own pace. And likewise, no amount of fire will ignite wet green kindling. So it's wise to remember that when you find yourself, you know, with bulging veins in your neck, trying to convince somebody of something that's way beyond their ability to comprehend. So, the thing is, we continue doing what we're doing on every level until we outgrow it and transcend it to the next level. You know, until a soul has done to the max whatever it is that it's got to do, until it's really tired of it, and it's really a completed momentum, and no longer shows up in their life, we're going to keep going through the same lesson again and again, because we've set it up that way. We're not the victims of the world that we see. We're actually the world that we see. It's actually projected out of our own imperative to see in that particular way until we're finished seeing in that way. The truth is, we're all souls learning lessons. And the truth is that every individual is where they are and doing exactly what they're doing, because in the present moment, in time, that's all they're able to do. Given the karmic load that they've come in with, and their current resources, their environment, and everything that is going on in that situation, everyone's doing the best that they can. To know better is to do better. So we have no right to ever judge ourselves or anyone else, but to really be our own support system. You may be the only support system you have in your life, except for Almighty God. So above all, please yourself, be true to yourself, honor yourself, and allow yourself to be what you as a soul believe, think, postulate, whatever you want to call it, what you feel you have to be and do at this time. You know, the old saying goes, never judge a person until you've walked a mile in their shoes. So, in terms of your spiritual development, I think the best perspective that we can have is to realize that this life is like a tiny paragraph or even maybe a sentence in the book of your life. You know, the great Emperor Akbar, who was one of the earlier incarnations of the Master Moria, when it came time for him to leave his body, he gave instructions for his funeral procession. He said, place my hands in an open, upright position so that everyone can see that my hands are empty. All that I have acquired, all my power, all my wealth and fame, and that has come to naught, for I have to leave it all behind. So let that be my parting message to all. We came into this world empty-handed, and we shall leave this world empty-handed. You know, getting a higher perspective, a clearer perspective on life, so you don't make such a big deal out of things, is very important, I think. I believe that we have a lot of desperation in our Western mindset for the simple reason that we have not been taught of the continuity of the soul's continuous unfoldment through many, 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 many embodiments and planetary systems and life episodes. And when you think you have to crowd every little molecule of pleasure out of this one tiny life, which for some is over before it's ever begun, it makes you kind of desperate. It gives rise to envy and jealousy because you feel like some people are the haves and others are the have-nots. And you don't realize that the soul passes through every single one of the pairs of opposites in this crucible of life. So as individualized consciousness, which we call soul, we pass through a continuity of life episodes, each drawing forth and building upon the previous episode. And in each embodiment, we take on a new persona. We enact a new role. We embody a new character. And we experience life from a different angle. And in each new life episode, you receive certain assistance that will help you to hold the focus of your soul's purpose for that lifetime. For example, you receive a new high self that keeps you spiritually on track, or at least tries to. You receive a new physical elemental or basic self, and sometimes two, and they can be of either gender. And that can be different than your body's current gender. Will that make you predisposed to attraction to the same sex? No, not necessarily. Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. That, again, is a bent of the sapling or a predisposition to experience life in that particular venue or viewpoint. So you can look at your high self as your spiritual guide and your basic self or selves as young children that you are to raise and train in becoming responsible conscious selves one day. They're little immature elemental spirits that you're raising much like children. And they behave anywhere from 2 to 3 to 4 years of age usually. And you can't let them run your life. And they will try to. They're all about self-indulgence and pleasure and the things that pertain to your physical and sensual expression. So you have to exercise conscious direction in those particular levels. So with each new embodiment, you receive also a new set of genes from your parents and a new environment and often a new nationality. A new religion, a new racial type. Ultimately, as a soul, you have been every race, every color, every nationality. You will have lived upon every landmass and every planet. And I might add, you may have been every religion and participated in every culture. That's why we can't have attitudes of againstness towards any of our brothers and sisters that are currently expressing in a different philosophical or religious or cultural valence. So we will, as souls, have experienced every state of being. And we will have been rich and famous, as well as poor and unknown. And we will have been the worst of the evildoers and the greatest of saints. And sometimes our lives are ones of great adventure, or you have many experiences and you travel and you accomplish a lot of great things. And often these very adventurous lifetimes can be followed by a lifetime where it appears that the soul takes a rest and may have a very quiet life where they live in the same house, in the same town, and really do nothing in particular of note in that lifetime. You know, it's recorded in the archives of the masters that the master who at one time had played the role of Mary, the mother of Jesus, that her next two lifetimes before she attained her ascended mastery were spent in a quiet cloister as a nun. Isn't that interesting? Perhaps it's because the soul was so traumatized, let's say, in seeing her son crucified in that manner. Two quiet, totally unknown lifetimes followed that lifetime for Mary as a cloistered nun. So that's why you can't judge yourself in this life or even question why you've lived as you have. You did what you did and do what you do because of factors set in motion at a previous time, which through the grace of God you don't remember, so you have a clean, fresh start. I don't advise digging up your past. If you need to know your past, two things will happen. Either you will be gifted and guided into reading the Akashic Records, or you will have come to a point in your spiritual integration where you literally have access forward and backward on the timeline, or it shows up, somehow it's revealed to you, if you absolutely have to know. But it's enough to know it's in your life now, and you have to handle it now. That's practical spirituality. So here's an exercise to try. If you would like to tune in, let's say, to your Akashic imprint, so first of all, you'll always ask to be filled and surrounded and protected by the Christ light. And then you take some situation in your life that's really poses a big question mark for you. And you ask, if it's for your highest good, to be shown the lesson you're learning from that situation. And then just be still and allow the pictures or thoughts or knowing to simply arise in your mind. It's like it just bubbles to the surface, and suddenly you see or you know. And write it down and read it to see if it fits and clarifies your lesson for you. You know, one of the best mantras I think you can repeat to yourself is, "And this too shall pass." So much of our upset comes from not making conscious choices about what we really want to have in our life and what we recognize or should recognize is not a beneficial or supportive influence. I often say to people who try to create a relationship with someone they've lost track of, let sleeping tigers lie. Don't try to create a relationship that hasn't shown up your life. It hasn't shown up because it's not meant to. You don't have business there. Things you have business with show up. And when they're finished, they leave your life. So all you need to do is stay present and observe. I know when we were in the ashram of Sai Baba, he was very strict about saying, don't form relationships and add more to your baggage while you're here in the ashram. Keep to yourself, keep to your spiritual practice, and don't just import your old familiar life here into the ashram. Life here is meant to be very, very difficult and uncomfortable so that you're not in your customary comfort zone. And I was pretty good at that. I watched how Baba's boys, his college boys, would never take their eyes off the foot or two in front of their feet as they would walk. They would walk very rapidly. They would keep their eyes down where they were walking, and they wouldn't speak. And that was part of their discipline. And Baba would make them stand very straight. He wouldn't allow any kind of slouching or sloppy kind of deportment around him at all. Everyone stood and like little soldiers and obey the most utmost impeccability in their conduct. So, in the new age, I think that's probably the only place you see this show up, we hear a lot of talk about the oneness of all life and unconditional love. And you hear many people claim, I'm divine and perfect. And often this rings hollow, not only to the person who's saying it, but also to everyone who's listening to it. Why? Because it's only been a head trip. It's something that's been believed intellectually or understood intellectually from some reading, but it's never gotten down into the heart and certainly not into the daily life. And unless it reaches our hearts and the heart center is truly opened, all talk of unconditional love and the oneness of all life is a waste of time. It's just more junk in the trunk, and in this case, mental junk. So how do you know when your heart is open? You know your heart is open when your natural response is goodness. You express without any thought, goodwill, kindness, helpfulness, without any personal agenda or payback. You don't even think of being something when you are that. It becomes incorporated, and that's such a good word because it means it becomes embodied as your natural way of relating. So the entirety of the spiritual life is coming into harmony with your authentic life, your authentic natural self, living in harmony with yourself, and with nature, and with others. One of the ways that we delay experiencing that is by hanging on to relationships only for the sake of being true to social expectations and conventions. And that, my dears, is being false to your true nature. For example, only humans try to hold on to their offspring after they've reached the age of survival on their own. Think about it. Somehow, society expects us as parents to maintain not only ongoing relationships with our children, but with our parents and our spouses and our relatives and all of that. And so often these relationships have clearly served their purpose and need to be released for the highest good of everyone. For example, sometimes people get all bent out of shape because they were adopted. And they go to all lengths to try to find their birth parents. Why? The dharma of those birth parents was to give birth to a body that your soul could use for a temporary house in which to express its life pattern for this one time. Why dig up and create a karmic relationship where none exists? How we complicate ourselves unnecessarily? So with all these countless lifetimes, here's another perspective for you. You have lived at some point and had a relationship with every single person that's in your life now. Probably all kinds of relationships. You know, there's a great, great love and relationship between two of them, the ascended masters, the Master Moria and the Master Kuzumi. And it's said that they have been together in countless lifetimes as husband and wife, as child and parent, as friends, as teacher and student, back and forth, back and forth. And that's true with everyone that you're particularly close to. If you would understand that, you would understand why sometimes the boundaries are inappropriately transgressed in certain relationships, and you wonder why. Well, if that wasn't under the onus of a particular cultural bias, probably it wouldn't be given another thought. It would just be taken in stride. So, well, that's the way it is. That's what showed up. But, oh, no, we have to make everything all rigid and regimented. And then we wonder why things don't flow the way we have expected them to be regimented and controlled and dictated. There is a higher nature, which when left fully able to express through the instrument, will unerringly guide it to the way of the highest good. You know, when I was raising my child, I was told that if you put a selection of various kinds of food on that child's, what do you call it, the little chair they sit in, little feeding tray, that they, if left alone, will pick a balanced diet. They'll pick exactly what they need to eat. And so I always did that. I didn't try to enforce a particular regimen on my children. I also allowed them their natural nature to begin to out. I remember I did the Tibetan number with Lila Krista. I put a variety of things in front of her. I put some money. I put some jewelry. I put some pictures of Sai Baba with religious articles. And what else did I put? Some food. I put them in front of her when she was she was sitting up, not very old. And she didn't even look at anything. She went directly to Sai Baba. And she would sit from the time she was a baby, tiny baby, she would sit very quietly and look at I have maybe 6, 7, 8 albums of pictures of Sai Baba. She would sit and look at those pictures. Tiny little baby. And that is the child that Sai Baba physically told my husband and I in an interview that he would send to us. That's Baba's child. And from the time she was a baby, that was her main focus. It's not that way now. She's doing life. She's doing karma. She's doing what all souls do when they're seeking their authentic nature and self. She's trying to pretzel herself to fit everyone's expectations. But it's her age. It's what you do when you're 20-something. So the point I'm making here is that we come in with a very natural inclination and nature, which before it's conditioned and schooled and educated and socially pressed into our psyche, would be the natural way that we would be. And yes, we come under the karma of the social patterning of the historical period and the culture that we're born into. It's part of the game plan. But the fact that what the world expects of us sometimes goes counter with what we are divinely programmed by our Creator to manifest in that lifetime, guess who you need to pay attention to? Okay? And it's not social pressure. So once you understand the justice and the perfection with which our lives unfold, you will no longer be able to play the victim role with any conviction, because you'll begin to know that the laws of karma will return to every person the necessary justice to balance every seeming injustice. So, with regard to relationships, when has a relationship served its purpose? I would say when there is no longer anything holding that relationship together. In fact, there is no relationship. No relating is taking place. You are living maybe under the same roof, but as if you were strangers to one another. That's when you're wasting your time, and you need to move on and let go. You know, we create unnecessary conflict for ourselves by setting up resistance in so many ways to our nature, our natural way of being. For example, if we would just eat when we're hungry and eat exactly what we really want to eat, all of the conflict and confusion around eating would be circumvented. And I'll just bet you we wouldn't have any eating disorders. But we set up these rigid rules about what we can and cannot eat, and then we judge ourselves for failing when our nature asserts itself, as surely it will at some point. Likewise, we get all anxious and conflicted over so many things in relationships, which if we would simply be true to ourselves and live in harmony with our nature, would be absolutely no problem at all. And this is where we do it with relationships. We try to force a relationship when there's really no bond. And often we try to change the relationship, creating even more conflict and pain and struggle for everyone involved, because we want that relationship to fit our expectations, our ideals. We want it to be the end-all and be-all because we live in this fantasy that somehow there's a Prince Charming or a Princess, Sleeping Beauty or something, rather than selectively cultivating relationships only where there's a compatible combination of consciousness and energy. Certain people will go out of their way to seek out issues, to create drama, to create conflict, but really, if they'd mind their own business, everything would be just fine. And these are examples of ego patterns. Ego is always looking for a fix, because ego feeds off of controversy, conflict, strife, and drama. So observe in your relationships that there are certain people who are always going to argue on every issue. They're going to find that tiny little bone of contention only because they want to argue and take a fight. They want to, in other words, energy suck. They're in a feeding frenzy to sustain their negative ego patterns. So you often see that in a family. And just because you are born into a family does not mean you have to stay in close relationship with that family after you're able to move out on your own. So life is so simple if we just let it be. If we stay true to our own nature and stay at peace within that nature, it's not self-indulgence that we're talking about here. Self-indulgence comes, and addictive, obsessive, compulsive behaviors come when we have been false to our true nature, and that bottled-up resistance and retained energy has to out in some way, and it comes out in aberrated patterns. You know, if you go into some of these indigenous cultures where people live very natural lives, very much in tune with the earth and their environment and with the tribe in which they live, you don't find these psychological psycho cases like you do in Western society, where we all need a shrink, to remain maintain some semblance of appropriate behavior in society and its craziness. I don't know. You go and go and go and nothing shifts. Just get more junk in the trunk. So it's the artificial rules and expectations and demands that we place out upon ourselves and others that causes this sense of disquietude that seems to be in almost everyone's life to some degree. There's a high level of anxiety that finds all ways of expression through drinking and smoking and promiscuous relationships and being obsessive with technology and having to be texting or Facebooking or tweeting or something every blooming second of the day and night. It's that kind of behavior that is the natural self trying to get out and breathe. And, you know, if the true nature can't express, then the ego nature will sure take you for a ride. So we're famous on this planet for trying to force nature instead of learning how to live in harmony with it. And when we try to force ourselves into unnatural patterns that so go against our nature, it's to be expected that we're going to break at some point, and our society, which is barely an extension of our collective persona, is showing forth that breaking at this time as well. I love what Sai Baba has to say about relationships. This is such a quintessential truth. This is your eternal relationship, okay? Your true father, your father is truth. Your mother is love. Your daughter is peace. Your son is wisdom. And your true friends are enlightened beings. Your real nature is God. And this is what he says about himself, how he experiences himself. The Sai Baba saying this. When I am with a woman, when I'm with women, I'm a woman. When I'm with men, I'm a man. When I'm with children, I'm a child. And when I'm by myself, I am God. And that's true of every one of us. When we're left alone and our true authentic nature is present, are divine. And we're in a state of bliss. You know, it's just a natural peace that when you allow yourself to breathe your air and live your life true to your own values, your own understanding, your own natural sense and way of being, you're happy. That's not a life of unbridled license. Because again, unbridled license comes from inhibiting and suppressing the nature. For example, why is there so much sexual abuse in these orders where the natural male sexual drive could only possibly find release with oneself or with another male? I mean, does that take rocket science to put those two things together? The natural sexual expression finds its own natural outlets in nature, naturally, governed by cycles and seasons. But again, humanity is the only species that you know, has no rhyme or reason for its behavior. It allows its immature levels to run it instead of the wisdom of the soul taking full embodiment and living through that life and mind and expression. So another example is when you allow controlling individuals who may have been your mother or your father or your relatives or a spouse or a child, but they refuse to allow you to live your own life. You know, it's where who and what you are is so totally unacceptable to them that all they do is create unhappiness, discord, conflict, and eat your head whenever you're trying to relate. Be beware. Because in those instances, unless you have the wit to take your body out of that relationship, you're going to create karma. If you allow people to abuse you and misuse you and inflict their consciousness upon you inappropriately, without making a conscious choice, and you can either choose to live with it in acceptance, or you can depart in peace. But either way, you have to be true to what you know in your heart you need to do to not create more involvement there. A good way to discern in a relationship is what's going on is in how you feel when you're relating to a certain individual. That feeling is your issue if it's an unpleasant feeling. It's for you to address and deal with. For example, two very nice people may be very toxic when in relationship with each other. And there are a variety of reasons for that, but mainly they are incompatible in terms of the chemistry of their consciousness, their rays, their particular qualities, their soul directives are incompatible for a whole variety of reasons, even though by themselves they may be just fine. You know, when you're in a laboratory putting together components, if you're a scientist, you quickly learn what is compatible and what isn't, if you don't want an explosion. Same principle in relationships. Same thing when you're a gardener. A wise gardener knows that certain plants aren't friendly to each other. So you don't plant them in close proximity because neither will thrive. You observe that in nature. To each his own. Birds of a feather flock together. It sounds trite, but nature is the best preacher and life is the best teacher. And if you keep your eyes open, you can see where you're living a natural life in the harmony and rhythm of the universe and when you're living a very artificial life because you're not going to be thriving. Notice, for example, in relationships where a person will drain the very life out of you. They deplete you of joy and confidence. And they turn every moment that you spend with them into times that you dread. You know, it's that person that, oh, God, I can't bear to talk to them on the phone. Oh, no, I don't want to answer the door. They're there. You know, you become victimized by your own inability to simply decide what you're going to participate in and what you're not. It's as simple as saying, you know what, I'm not going to talk to that person by phone anymore. You know what? I'm going to delete those emails. I'm not going to even read them. You know what? I'm going to tell that person, you know what? I think our relationship is completed. And it may offend them. It may hurt their feelings. Whatever. You can find a way to say it so it isn't too harsh. But be honest. Be true to yourself. So, we're told that we need to honor our father and our mother. Let's take Sai Baba's directive on that. Your father is truth, your mother is love. Honor the truth and honor the love. And be courteous. You never abuse or seek to consciously hurt another person. I don't care who they are or what they've done. That's just spiritual etiquette. So as a suggestion, at the first sign that you see a person heading south into an ego-controlling pattern, which they usually start through some form of anger, anger is a person, an ego, trying to control and manipulate, okay, through intimidation. That's the whole anger game, is intimidation. To try to manipulate you to do what they want you to do. If that doesn't work, then they'll follow up with accusations or blaming or slandering and gossiping behind your back, hoping to hook you into their karma drama. Your dharma is to recognize it for what it is and not participate. Go silent and leave the environment where they're running their number. That's simple. If you stay and listen, chances are you're going to get mad, you're going to get hooked in, you're going to get upset. So don't think you can change them or fix them. Their idea is not to be in harmony with you. Their idea is to get an ego fix. You got it? They want to feed. They want to energy suck. They don't want a loving relationship. You're dealing with someone who's unconscious, sound asleep, spiritually dead. They can't hear you. Nobody's home. There's just old karma drama running many, many people in our world today. So whatever needs to be resolved, if it's possible to resolve it, you put it in the light and ask the Holy Spirit to arrange the situation so that there can be resolution and closure or healing. Sometimes it's an ancient hatred that is destined to become a present love. So sometimes it's a healing action that's taking place. But you always notice when that's the case that there's a willingness by both participants. You know, they both have to want it. And they both have to be willing to work at staying centered and conscious, because that's the only way solutions can be worked out, is from that place of sincere communication, backed by a desire to understand each other and to find ways to make the relationship work. And sometimes that's possible and sometimes it's not. And the continuing agitation without any change is the red flag that this is a toxic combination that's not going to end well. So exercise your wisdom and take your body and your mind and your heart and your loving where it's going to be appreciated. Be wise in who and what you allow in your life, in your mind, and in the company of your soul's destiny. This lifetime is really, really a crucial one. Many souls are moving into various levels of Christ consciousness. Many souls, this is their last lifetime. Many souls on Earth assignment will be able to return back to their home, to their higher dimensional civilization and world, and it's important not to get trapped here. You will come back where you have a strong investment of your emotions and your mind. You must possess yourself. You must own your own sovereignty and not spill it over and allow it to become entrapped in this material realm, or anything that's here. This too shall pass. Sai Baba said this life is like a caravan. It's just passing through. It's a three-day fair. You don't build a house here for eternity. Jesus said you don't lay up your treasures here where moth and rust is sure to destroy them, but lay up your treasures in the kingdom of heaven within you. So it's not unconditional love to allow the conditioned ego patterns of another person to run all over you and ruin your joy and steal your peace of mind. That's the work of the dark forces. You know, the Apostle James had a great deal to say about that in the book of James in the New Testament. He was very, very clear at calling a spade, and he said the very root cause of all evil and all negative, everything that follows in the train that we would call negative and evil, the root of that is strife. And the whole agenda of the dark forces is to exacerbate strife, to find strife and perpetrate it where there's no need for it. There's no need for it. You'll see that so often in websites today, and in where they're not carefully monitored. You'll see some individual that's just got a bone of angst to pick out with everyone, or these people that snoop other websites to find some bone of contention to create a conflict about and to engage other people in that. Be too wise to be snagged into that. Those are the energies that cannot ascend into the fifth dimension. That's that polarized old mindset of the old paradigm that's going to have to be relinquished and transformed to move into a planet which is governed by oneness and unconditional loving. So those polarized states of consciousness, the black and the white, are now merging into the gold of conscious soul awareness. And that gold is mixed with the silver of the grace of the Divine Spirit. So keep visualizing all of the dualities of your nature coming together in that golden orb of soul consciousness. You can visualize that over your head if you like. See the negative coming in from the left, positive energy coming in from the right, black on the left, white on the right, and see them meeting in a triangle right over the top of your head in the soul star, that golden orb above your head. And there see the holy dove of divine grace and peace symbolized as a beautiful silver shaft of light coming down into your soul and enabling you to transcend the illusion of duality and conflict, discord, artificiality, the laws and rules of the call realms. See that all be dissolved and the pure divine light and grace of a higher way of living and being and expressing. That's what we're here to do. And as I said before, the reason why this is staying up in the head and it's not finding its way down into our behavior and our relationships is because somewhere it's getting stuck in the ego mind and the heart is not being opened. People act out of ego because their hearts are still closed. So put your hands on your heart right now. You put your focus where you're touching. That's why you touch your heart. Begin to breathe in and out of your heart as if it had little nostrils. And think of something, someone that you love or appreciate, something you're grateful for that happened today, something warm and bright. And ideally, someone that you love. Maybe you think of John Roger, or Sai Baba, or Jesus Christ. And allow that love to fill your heart. Gratitude. So your heart began to open and expand like a beautiful rose. And begin to express in your mind, and maybe vocally out loud, I love you so much. My Lord, my God, I'm so grateful for this life that you've given me. I'm so grateful for the privilege of being an incarnation at the close of this nature cycle and the dawning of a totally new version of the earth. I'm grateful that I have ears that I can hear this transmission this evening. That I have eyes that can see. That I have a body that I can host you in, my beloved. I'm so grateful. And I love you with all my heart. Open my heart, the eyes of my heart, that I may see your beautiful face, superimposed on everyone's face. Teach me to love with a compassion that as I become more aware of the faults of others, and I can see more clearly where they're caught up in their dramas, that I won't take upon myself a feeling of superiority or look down or mock these younger souls, but give me genuine compassion. The compassion and empathy that can put itself in the same shoes, the same place, and understand. For it's only the heart that understands. The mind can't understand. Your ego mind functions very well as an operative within the illusion. But it's completely served its purpose and becomes useless once your focus from conscious soul awareness. So recognize when it's time to exercise a more excellent way of operating in your life and in the world and in your relationship. It's time for us all to graduate and to move on to a higher level of integration, mastery, initiation, and beatification. Because the Blessed One, the Beloved, wants to fully inhabit you. The Beloved uses each one of us as his body of manifestation. We are all brilliant diamonds in the light body of the Christ. We are the collective bride. We are the twin flame of the Beloved. There's only one true twin flame. And that is your own Beloved soul, your own spirit. All the other relationships become dissolved in that one, that one wonderment of union with the Beloved. That is the one that you really need to cultivate. Because with that, all sense of incompletion comes to an end. And you awaken in the heart of all that is. Be aware, beloved, and come into truth, authenticity, and your own true soul's purpose. And nature. Let's go out chanting on IQ. Deep breath. Holding our hands outward, we speak peace to all of the elements of nature, peace to the elemental spirits of fire, earth, wind, and ether, peace to the elementals that are in need of human composure in order to gain a reference point for their proper and natural behavior. Let us be the embodiment of what we would have manifest in our world at this time. God bless you, and God willing, I will be with you next week. Bye. Baruch Hashem Adonai.